This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
AI company Anthropic is withholding the release of its new Mythos model. The company says some of its AI capabilities are too powerful. Anthropic says its Mythos preview presented unprecedented cybersecurity risks. They found thousands of vulnerabilities in every major operating system and web browser. It's warning that the fallout for economies, public safety, and national security could be severe. Now it's announcing a new project to secure the world's most critical software.
In a year in which AI has truly dominated much of the news cycle, the story of Anthropic's Mythos may be the biggest story of them all. A version of the popular Claude AI service, it is said to be so powerful, it has uncovered vulnerabilities that have remained undetected for decades, that the company says it can't release it yet to the public. As governments race to meet with company officials, there are serious fears of cybersecurity risks, which has resulted in many leading software companies joining a new working group to try to get ahead of the issue before the AI model is publicly released. Jason Miller is a colleague at the University of Ottawa, where he holds the Canada Research Chair in the Ethical Engineering of Robotics and Artificial Intelligence. He leads the Canadian Robotics and Artificial Intelligence Ethical Design Lab, where he focuses primarily on the ethics, policy, and engineering of automated vehicles, artificial intelligence, healthcare robotics, and social and military robotics. He joins me on the podcast to talk about Anthropic's Mythos, the AI governance challenges, the importance of distinguishing between AI security and AI safety, and what he thinks the government should be doing to address this latest AI challenge. Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
For listeners that haven't been following what is being described as one of the biggest AI stories of the year, maybe you can bring us up to date. You know, what is Claude Mythos? What did Anthropic announce with Project Glasswing as a mechanism to try to deal with this? And why should we be concerned, in a sense? Why is this different from some of the other AI model releases that we've seen?
Yeah, well, thanks. Like you, I've been following this pretty closely, although it's hard to keep track of everything going on these days. So Mythos is one of Anthropic's latest models, so these large language models, though it seems to be trained particularly well on finding and exposing and presumably helping to patch security issues in software systems. And so when they announced the release of Mythos, they basically said, look, this thing has been able to detect vulnerabilities in key software packages like, you know, Linux installations, Microsoft Windows. I'm assuming basically every system that's out there, to the extent that it's uncovering vulnerabilities that have been in there for, you know, I think the longest one is 27 years that they mentioned that have gone undetected. And this amazing AI model has been able to, you know, uncover those things and allow us to understand a lot more about the vulnerabilities that exist in today's leading software systems. So these are the systems that are keeping everybody secure online, presumably. They're the operating systems and applications that everybody uses every day. You can just think of it that way. So in response, they launched Project Glasswing, which again, as they've reported it, is a special pre-release, a project where they're going to pre-release Mythos to a select number of partners, so that they can get ahead of the vulnerabilities in their own software systems. But these partners are getting advanced access to the model, and they will have kind of free tokens to use, like credits to use with Mythos, so that they can test their own systems. Anthropic has promised within 90 days to release a report based on Project Glasswing. So the idea here is that this Mythos is so dangerous that we have to give it to a select group of people who run these systems that Mythos has found vulnerabilities in. And then, you know, that'll get the industry ahead of the hackers. so that we can harden the systems, and hopefully in 90 days we'll have a better understanding of what they found, and then what to do about those systems. Those companies can release patches and whatnot. Now, what happens after that 90-day period? It's not 100% clear to me. I don't think it's 100% clear to anybody. Did they release this thing to the public? I think that was their plan, or release it more broadly anyway. But Glasswing is meant to be this buffer that they've created to find some vulnerabilities and get ahead of the bad guys, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah. No, so you're right. That sort of buffer, that Project Glasswing, is largely framed as a cybersecurity initiative, as you suggest. Find some of the vulnerabilities before the attackers might, using this exact tool to do so, and then try to patch that takes place. So essentially give a bit of a head start in that regard. Now, you've written in the past, I know on your Substack, talking about how security policies alone won't make AI safe. So what do you think they are solving for here? And perhaps more importantly, what's not being solved with this kind of initiative?
Yeah, so in the work that I do, the research, I'm concerned primarily with safety, AI safety. So what kinds of harms are people, subjected to by virtue of there being these types of big models, AI models out in the world? So that's part of what I do in my research. And I hear a lot of talk about the importance of AI security and cybersecurity generally. It's absolutely critical. Obviously, we need to keep systems secure. There's an important distinction to be made between securing a system and making it safe. And this is something that I worry sometimes gets lost in the conversation. So just to use an analogy, the security of a system is like asking, is the door locked? Like you're trying to protect a room, a building, you put a lock on the door. What kind of lock are we using? That's a security issue. Is it locked? When is it locked? Is it always locked? Is it sometimes locked? Who has the keys? Who have we given the keys? Are they supposed to, do we know if anyone else has the keys? What's behind the door? What's inside that thing that we're trying to secure? Those are the kinds of issues that secure a system or some sort of infrastructure. Safety is implicated by security, right? So let's say someone picks the lock and then walks away from the building. Okay, for sure, they've done something wrong. They've picked the lock. They know how to get in. They've exposed a vulnerability. But we would say that they've probably violated one rule, right? Maybe they've broken a law in the process of doing that, but they haven't entered the room necessarily or stolen anything. Again, I'm not saying that it's not a bad thing what they've done, but what I'm trying to do here is distinguish between the security breach and the other types of harms that result sometimes, but not always, as a result of a security breach. So, the person walks into the room, steals some stuff, and then takes off. Then you've got other harms, right? So that's the difference between, the analogy is not perfect, but that's the basic difference between security and safety issues. So it's really important to keep these in mind. What we're talking about here with Mythos is the fact that it is exposing a number of security flaws in computer systems. But where the focus is on security, it doesn't necessarily make AI safer. It means that you can't exploit those security flaws to cause harms that would otherwise be possible. But it doesn't, in and of itself, make the AI necessarily safer. So you can have a perfectly secure system that people still use to create safety problems. So, for example, you can have an AI, what I write about in the Substack is an example. You can have a perfectly secure social media platform, for example, where people log in, they use the system as kind of as intended for the most part. They're using their credentials. So there aren't any security issues here, but they use the system to, the system is designed to kind of track your behavior, exploit privacy concerns, maybe manipulate you into doing certain things using other AI-powered features on the system. So again, you can have a perfectly secure system that does things that are what you would consider unsafe to individuals. So the two are, it's just important to distinguish between those two issues. So here we're talking about, fixing security problems, but not addressing the safety issues.
Okay, that it's an important distinction to make. Speaking of the security side of it, Alex Stamos, the former Facebook security chief, has been speaking on some of this. And, he put a number on the urgency of acting here. He talked about sort of roughly 6 months before some of the open models catch up to the vulnerability finding capability. In other words, he's saying that every ransomware actor is going to be able to find and weaponize these bugs, perhaps without even leaving that trace on that door, so to speak, for law
Right.
enforcement. So if that timeline is roughly right, that there really is just 6 months, is this model even viable? Can defenders actually get ahead in 6 months? You talked about 90 days for some sort of report. He's saying that he thinks this is more like a 6 month thing. Is this all a losing battle, or is this viable at all?
So I this is where this is one of the areas where I think this gets interesting. So I read a report just this morning that somebody sent me about how somebody has studied much smaller, much less capable models now to try to find some of these vulnerabilities that Mythos has found. And they were able to get much smaller, much less expensive, open weight models that they can install on kind of local machines to find some of these vulnerabilities. And this kind of raises an issue, I think, that we also need to think about when we're always reminded of the kind of near future or future problems with AI, which is that we have many existing problems with AI. The AI of today and yesterday creates security and safety risks. And so I try not to get too excited about what this means for 6 months from now or a year from now. I think what it signals to us is that these large language models are very vulnerable to, even when you have safety mechanisms put in place, they're very vulnerable to language games. Like what we know is that there's a lot of power in the prompting. So how you ask questions, how you break down problems, how you instruct the LLM, there are ways to replicate the kinds of things that maybe even in Mythos we're seeing, but with today's and yesterday's AI models. It's also hard when these companies put out benchmarks. So in the report that Anthropic released, they show a number of benchmarks. And what we know about these models and the benchmarks that they use to gauge the effectiveness or sophistication of the models is that more and more these models are being trained on the benchmark tests. So this is a report that came out a long time ago. To the extent that I know, we haven't solved this problem. So it's hard to gauge the extent to which these are new problems. How much more sophisticated Mythos is compared to, say, the OpenAI model that was released, I don't know, 3, 4 days after Mythos was announced by OpenAI. And so I don't know what to say about this. I mean, the cynical side of me wants to say that when we hear these kind of predictions, we're too caught up in the kind of r the race for tomorrow that we're being distracted from dealing with the issues of today. I don't want to, I'm not saying that Mythos isn't significant. But I think we really need to weigh that against, like, how much attention have we paid on fixing up the issues that we know exist today, that existed yesterday, and how much of this is just kind of hyping us to get ready for the new thing, establishing new norms, trying to get us comfortable with the status quo, because there's something worse coming 6 or 10 or 12 months from now. It's a bit of a distraction, and in the work that I do as well, I try to remind people, we have a number of safety issues that are existing today and security issues. If we start working on those and really, really work on the supply and demand side of the AI safety issues, we stand to kind of start patching up the systems and creating the conditions for less and less of these kinds of announcements in the future, I believe. So there are a number of steps we can take to do that.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good answer. There have been some who've responded to the entire Mythos issue by raising questions as to whether or not how much of this is hype, how much is reality, how much is commercial gain to sort of say, hey, we've got the very best models that are out
It's
there.
great.
Take a look at the risks.
It's great
And
advertising, right?
it
And
certainly is.
it's also good risk management. from a legal perspective, hey, we know that we found some critical bugs. We're putting this model out there. I think it's a cybersecurity model. That's as I understand it. So let's tell the world that we've got this powerful thing, but that we're taking reasonable steps to prevent the worst types of abuses from happening.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about those reasonable steps? Because those reasonable
Sure.
steps really are Project Glasswing, which is, at least to date, sounds like a bit of a unique governance structure, at least something that we haven't seen, at least with this kind of speed and urgency. But there is no government membership here. There's no independent
Yeah.
auditor. There are no binding standards. There really is no public accountability mechanism. Anthropic has decided who gets access. And I think it's more than just their customers, but it is not all of their competitors, to be sure. They've set the terms, they've determined who gets disclosed and when. As you mentioned, there's this 90-day report. So that's the accountability architecture. We'll see something, I suppose, in 90 days. But they've made a lot of these kinds of decisions about what the framing is and what the work will be. How do you assess that as a governance model for something that is we've been discussing, Anthropic itself describes as really unprecedented in terms of some of the risks?
They're kind of operating in the environment that they've inherited, right? There are no AI-specific regulations in the US. We don't see anything on the horizon. And so companies are left trying to manage the risks that they see with their technology and then compete aggressively to get into a marketplace where, it's like you said earlier, they're really. There are no guardrails in place to prevent the worst kind of things from happening right now, even that are AI specific, right? So as a governance model, I mean, I think if you saw, well, this, first of all, I mean, this reminds me of, I think it was in early or mid 2023. It was before ChatGPT landed. There was a call to pause. Do you remember this? Everybody, we need a 6-month pause on the development of AI. And then, it very quickly kind of evaporated. People were saying, well, we can't do that, And I think companies, they're saying, well, we need to compete. ChatGPT comes out, and then it's no holds barred. Everybody's just out there competing. So what kind of a governance model do we expect from companies in an environment where all the incentives are pushing them to release models as quickly as possible and get ahead of their competitors? It's, I don't want to I don't want to suggest that all these corporations are just good actors waiting to be freed from their constraints or something like that. But I think we have to seriously ask, like, what do we expect of companies when the environment is it doesn't place any, nobody's really seriously asking them to put any hard guardrails on these types of systems. In fact, I think if any of these CEOs started posturing or taking the posture that they're going to slow things down, they're going to delay, they don't want their systems creating any harms, and it started creating economic pro like a kind of problems from a profitability perspective. I think we'd see these CEOs get in trouble, maybe get fired, right? I mean, this is the system they're operating in. So to a certain extent, we can't really blame them. So is Glasswing, is this good governance? I think short of regulations, and we can get into that topic, short of strict, stronger, enforceable, reasonable regulations that create a safe play, like, sandbox for these companies to compete in, this is the best we're going to see. That's what I'll say about this. And so I don't want to, it's not that they're not doing enough. It's that they're in a position where they can't. It's hard to imagine how they do more, honestly. So I look to governments. What are you doing?
And I want to look to government in just a second, get your views. Before we do that, though, I note that you started that response by saying, listen, there aren't any real rules or significant rules in the United States. So
I mean,
they
you're the
move
expert
ahead.
here. You can correct me. There are some,
No,
right?
there are some at the state level, but you're right. There isn't anything significant. This does feel like a big race, and many countries are really reluctant to put up what they see as innovation barriers here, and the money will move elsewhere, and some of the development will move elsewhere. And so there's this sense that if you want to be a player, you've got to, in a sense, participate in what at times can feel like a race to the bottom with some of these rules.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to touch on was more with respect from a Canadian perspective. So there is no Canadian institution or company that is part of Project Glasswing. We're kind of on the
That's right.
outside looking in. The Bank of Canada convened an emergency meeting with some of Canada's banks. That's a financial stability response, though. It's not an AI governance response. As we record this just a few days ago, Anthropic met with Evan Solomon, the AI minister, who seemed to declare himself somewhat assured about what the company is trying to do. But what do you think Canada should be doing here? I mean, how do we find ourselves, and it's not just Canada, of course, it's many countries now, essentially on the outside, but looking in on a process that we are not active participants in, but will have a dramatic impact or could have a dramatic impact on our own institutions?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this before with other tech companies coming out of Silicon Valley, right? Like, I mean, the whole social media, most of the internet, the social media, boom in the early 2000s, and it's ongoing. We've seen this before. We have very little control. In this case, I think it's even tougher. The amount of money that's being thrown into this kind of technology. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. I think that would, if we spent that much on AI and to try to come up with some sort of real sovereign solution, I think we'd probably quadruple our NATO spending. I don't know what the budgets look like, but we did. The point is, it's hard to come up with that kind of cash outside of the US, right? This is a situation we're in. So we talked about, these models exist in the US and let's say in China as well. They are primarily regulated in the US and I suppose in China as well. But to the extent that the rest of us outside of the US can do anything, it's not, we don't have a clear path to a sovereign AI future. We are reliant on these companies for these types of models anyway. You could imagine some companies spinning up targeted AI solutions that don't require hundreds of billions of dollars for training and testing and all that kind of stuff. So from Minister Solomon's perspective, he's in a tough spot as well. I mean, what they're doing right now, I'm sure, is trying to negotiate to get some access to these systems so that they can do some testing, because they're obviously and quite reasonably concerned, I'm sure, about the implication of these systems for Canadian companies, the Canadian government, and whoever else. So what can Canada do right now? It's going to be tough to imagine a different kind of response in the short term, but in the long term, I think this strategy of kind of looking around and seeing, how can we partner with other people to do what we can to create an environment that discourages the worst kinds of actors and encourages the best type of actors, whether that means forming, kind of trying to harmonize legislation or regulation with other jurisdictions like the EU, whoever. I mean, those are obviously options within Canada. I think we should. I think the Canadian public deserves some sort of, at least Canadian regulatory system that protects Canadians against the worst kind of harms. It doesn't. And so, this could be preventing against very particular types of uses of AI and putting in place some sort of supply side, restrictions as well. Or I mean, again, you're the legal scholar. I can talk about the things that the things I think that should be stopped by the specifics, in terms of regulations or other types of amending the criminal code for certain types of behaviors. I mean, I think there are options that they need to look into to really start clamping down on the harms that we know exist today.
Okay. Do we have so to stick even on the more the technical side, as you know, we did have AIDA, the AI legislation bill C-27. It was combined AI and privacy, which died with the last election call. It was largely modeled the AI piece on the EU AI Act, focused on high impact AI systems. I think there are many that are wondering whether or not that's already stale dated. We've already started to see some countries start to shift away a little bit from it, and certainly some real questions as to whether or not it's fit for purpose given the way that this world is evolving. Do we have, even on the technical side, the kind of governance structures in place in Canada to deal with this? I mean, it's one thing for the banks to get together, Evan Solomon to get together. You know, we have this AI Safety Institute. Is that the answer when these kinds of issues arise? Or should we be thinking about both legislation, but then also about what are some of the mechanisms that we can use from a Canadian perspective, to ensure that we can meet the moment when these kinds of things arise?
Yeah, we have amazing talent in Canada when it comes to understanding the technical ins and outs of AI and also the socio-technical ins and outs of AI. What kind of harms and safety issues and security issues come up with this kind of technology. So we've got this kind of technical security side covered, and we've got the ethics, the safety side covered as well. What we don't have, I think, as I see things today, is any kind of organization whose mandate really is to research and advise on the kinds of legal mechanisms that could be used to make the environment safer, to make it more secure. So, for example, the Canadian AI Safety Institute, as I understand it, it's a funding agency that does some that helps to get research done on safety issues. They've focused on security issues as well. I worry that the piece that you mentioned, I worry that the folk too much focus has been put on security in the past. We need to start thinking specifically about safety. Safety is the thing that is associated with the actual harms that Canadians stand to experience because of AI, deceptive practices, manipulation. Kind of addictive platforms and things like that. So it would be really nice to see the something like the Canadian AI Safety Institute, but with a clear mandate, like a more of a mandate to research and monitor the safety of the public, these public AI models, and recommend measures to government, and then have some mechanism where those, where the government can't reasonably deny that, that they know this stuff. Like we have this institute that's meant to be advising government on what should be done. I think companies should be held to better transparency and incident reporting requirements, right? So just to name a couple, and I mean, the AI Safety Institute could, like in a future version, could take on a role something like that, or some other body, so that we understand the current risks of AI. And I think that what that means is, again, like this kind of stuff goes beyond, maybe beyond Canada, and we're talking about getting into treaties or something like that, where we really demand that, companies, we limit the kinds of dimensions that companies can compete on. So, for example, we stipulate that certain things can't be considered proprietary, like training data sets, so that we just know the kinds of inputs that are going into these models. Keep the algorithms proprietary, but we need to know what you're using. And also, like, damn, we need to have a kind of system of damages that, so, if people are harmed, they can, seek redress that actually incentivizes companies to avoid those types of uses, and to avoid supplying, products that just kind of allow that the worst types of use.
Why don't we close with this? There's clearly an urgency. There's some debate as to how much of this is real and how much of this is there are elements of hype. And we could see some of the benefits that would arise from saying, hey, there's some real risk here. You need to act. But clearly, this has got everyone's attention. If you had the attention of senior policy official or Minister Solomon or someone in a decision-making position right now, especially from a Canadian perspective, what are the kinds of things that they ought to be prioritizing right now, recognizing that our legislative timelines are typically slow? They're certainly not at AI speed. This itself is moving really, really rapidly. And so,
Yeah.
within the realm of the possible, what do you think should be prioritized right now?
I think, okay, there's maybe the underlying the thing I want to focus on is, I think, an underlying cause, and I mentioned it before, of why we maybe don't have some of those things in place, like some of the kind of harm prevention strategies in place. And I think it has to do, with the fact that we spend too much time worrying about what's coming in the future and not enough time paying attention to what we have right now. So in the safety community, the AI safety community, I can tell you that for years now, we've been warning about these the types of harms that people are being exposed to. And you could list them: addictive interactions, AI that targets children, AI that targets elderly for, so vulnerable population, when, using deceptive practices to, to kind of do social engineering to steal from people, or to grab personal information, or to, other terrible things, unduly deceptive or manipulative techniques that people really are powerless a lot of times to recognize they're being subjected to and to respond to. And also testing dangerous technologies on unsuspecting publics. We don't have clear testing regimes put in place for any of this stuff. And what we see with Mythos, I think, is another example of worrying about future problems when the current problems, if we addressed those in meaningful ways, we would not be having conversations about Mythos-like risks tomorrow or today, like, or tomorrow. So cleaning up, I would ask that the policymakers that are out there trying to decide what to do with this, yes, you're going to be dealing with the Mythos-like thing, and you will forever be dealing with the next problem if we don't accept, or if we don't, take a step back and focus on what exists today and creating the kind of regulatory environment that demands that companies and people using AI act more responsibly, that sets clear lines in the sand, that and like meaningful, enforceable laws, regulations, to prevent those uses, and to force companies to take seriously the kinds of risks that those technologies pose to individuals, not just security, but safety, right? I think getting away from the constant forward-thinking mentality it would be a huge step, and it's shocking how hard it is to get people to do that, but somebody has to do that. So, this is a policymaker's problem, not the public's problem. I mean, it's the public's problem because they suffer the results of this, but it's the policymakers' challenge to solve this problem, right? We can't put this on individuals. We have to have a better environment for these companies to operate in. In part, just to let them be better. But they're not going to be better if we don't force them to do it. We know that.
I think you're right. I mean, it does feel like Anthropic response to this is in part an effort to try to do what it can on an individual basis to try to bring some other companies in, but they're doing so with the explicit recognition that this world is a big one in terms of the number of players that are out there, and is moving quickly. And so I think it's really it's such grounding advice to say, listen, there's a whole lot of things that we could be focused on without sort of the shiny object that's sitting there in the future saying, hey, we've got to jump to deal with it. So, I want
100%.
to thank you for the work that you do that really does bring together this technology side with the law regulatory piece and thinking about both security, but especially on safety. And thanks as well for taking the time to join me here on the podcast.
Thanks, Michael.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca, or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.